Thank you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
The American Supreme Court said the Cherokees had every right to keep their land and such, but, you know, Andrew Jackson evoked for that first time states' rights, you know, states' rights that have a long, ugly tradition, you know.
Yeah, I've gotten to a place where I just don't think much of Andy Jackson anymore.
I never liked him to begin with, but, you know, everything from the war and, you know, the Battle of New Orleans, which was fought 2 weeks after this treaty was signed, but nobody, in those days you couldn't get the news out fast enough, to many of the things he did were not very smart, but, you know, he was Andy Jackson. He was, I guess, the first populist president in certain levels, and, you know, and...
No, the first American-born president, too, wasn't he?
Well, I don't know, was Madison born... Well, Washington and Madison and stuff, I believe...
No, they were born before the... I mean, they were born before the Revolution.
Oh, okay, yeah, oh, okay, yeah. But they were born in North America, I believe, you know.
But I mean, born post the winning of the Revolution.
Yeah, no, I guess he was then. Yeah, I would probably say he was. But it's, you know, it's like, you know, history is, you know, and then we come to 9/11, which, as a New Yorker, is for me really difficult because I have such mixed feelings. you know, I mean, I was, you know, I was sitting there with my 1.5-year-old son at the time, you know, in bed. My wife had just gotten into work. She was working at the time at the Chrysler Building. You know what the Chrysler Building is, and I know most people do in New York City. And, you know, when I saw the second plane hit the World Trade Center, I immediately called her up. I said, you know, you are to get out of the Chrysler Building right now. You know, I don't care what your boss says. Tell him, you know, go fuck yourself for all I care. You're getting out of the Chrysler Building. Get on that last express bus and get back, you know, home, because this isn't good. You know, I know... For a day or two, I think if you were a thinking, feeling person, you couldn't have a couple of tears in your eyes. I think a lot of people sat down and cried. But the remarkable thing about New York City, and I know people think I'm crazy when I say this, especially people who weren't in New York City, was, you know, New York City was very divided over that. There were many of us who, you know, immediately said things like an eye for an eye will just make us blind. You know, revenge is not what we need immediately.
No. The idiots waving the bloody shirt were largely not in New York City, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were outraged. Don't get us wrong. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I love this city. You know, I love this country, too. I mean, I may tell you that, you know, I think it has gone horribly wrong. You know, but I stay here. You know, I thought very seriously about moving to Canada once or twice. Half my relatives live abroad. but, you know, I stay here because this is my country. I have every right to be here and believe the way I believe. You know, and I'm not going away. That would be too easy for, you know, these assholes who are running it and stuff at times. You know, I'm not going away. I will say my say.
You've got your back up, as we'd say.
Yeah. And 9/11was a real rough time. And what was a rough time about it was, you know, when people would ask me, they said, why did they do this to us? How could they hate us, though? I was like, you don't understand, do you? You know, the World Trade Center maybe to you represents these beautiful pillars of finance and economics, but to a lot of people in the third world and a lot of people outside of this country, it represents probably some of the worst parts of capitalism and American greed. You know, the Pentagon, I mean, I respect people who serve this country. I certainly respect armed forces. I understand that many of those people in Iraq and Afghanistan are probably there because it beat like pumping gas or working at Walmart when they got out of high school, you know, and there wasn't money to go to college. you know, that's...
Well, all you have to do, Keith, is consider the reality in places like where I am.
Oh, very much so. And
you know, this little two-bit high school up the road from here graduates, oh, I don't know, 50, 75 kids every spring.
And military recruiter just waiting.
And the military recruiters waiting. Yeah, they're camped out. Boys go into the military, and boys go into the mines, and a tiny fraction of them go to college.
Right. No, and that unfortunately is becoming the reality all over this country. You know, and that's sad. But I have no doubt in my mind, again, the Pentagon to me is not a nice place. You know, to me it is not this wonderful place of respect and honor. It's basically a place that functions to perpetuate this killing machine that is the American military. I mean, which, you know, I often said when people said to me, well, how would you have responded?
Yeah, it's not disrespectful to note that the military is not a social service agency. It is a structural arm of government whose job is to blow things up, kill people, and break things.
Right. You know, and we do it very efficiently. You know. I don't know if we do it efficiently or not.
When you look at what a gallon of gas costs in Afghanistan, Keith.
That's true. Okay.
The efficiency model goes down when you consider the long term costs to the broken human spirits and bodies that the American government, our government, doesn't like well, especially in the hands of Republicans, doesn't like to consider on the backside of wars. You know, I was talking with a Vietnam veteran, my buddy Bo Webb, the other day. He was Marine artillery. And we were talking about, you know, the backlash, the veterans' backlash of, you know, the after effects of Vietnam. And he said, you know, he agreed with me that we have no idea what is coming 10, 20, 30 years down the road from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Oh, no, I do have an idea, and we should brace ourselves. I mean, as someone who is a nurse who works with, you know, psychiatric-based issues very often. I work with AIDS patients, but I work with people who are substance abuse addicted, who are mentally ill. The PTSD that we have inflicted on a generation, it is mind-numbing to me what this is both going to cost in dollars, and the effects this is going. You cannot put people in military theaters. You know, Vietnam, at least they had the common sense that after a year or so, they got you out. And they told you you weren't going back for a certain amount of time.
Meanwhile, yeah, now in this era, we have men committing suicide rather than go back for their ninth deployment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can't do that to people. You know, you just can't. And have them come out normal. You really can't. So I have a very good idea what's coming down the road, and
well, particularly given your area of expertise.
You know, we have no idea what box of shit we opened up with that, because it's going to be horrible. It's going to be very horrible.
Our buddy Mark in Florida, a former Marine himself, recommends the documentary The Corporation. And he says it contains footage of MacArthur, Patton, and Eisenhower attacking U.S. veterans' bonus army with Gatling guns, small cannons, and horses.
Oh, very much so.
Such patriotism.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's how MacArthur got his claim to fame before he waltzed off to the Pacific to lose the Philippines and then regain it. You know, was basically, you know, he was the general who led the charge into that bonus army. And, you know, that was our first inclination of how we treat our veterans, you know. I mean, that was really scary. In the midst of the Great Depression, here are these.
Oh, I lost. Oh. Sorry, Keith. We will continue this perhaps another evening. Let's go forward in the time remaining. Oops. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
How you doing, man?
I'm well. Yourself?
Doing all right. Doing all right. And I second the recommendation of The Corporation for sure.
I've seen it myself, and it's wow.
Yeah, yeah. And it includes a section on General Smedley Butler and how big business tried to recruit him for a coup against FDR.
Exactly. And you know, we have to remember that the triggering effect that caused him to write War as a Racket was him looking back on his own career and realizing that even in the late 19th and early 20th century, he had basically been a hitman for corporate America, whether it be China, the Philippines, Nicaragua, or Haiti.
That's right. That's right.
He had always been there to protect an American corporate interest.
Yep, yep. And he had been awarded, you know, the highest honors. A couple of times he got the Congressional Medal of Honor. And I'm not sure what his turning point was exactly, but, you know, it was just too much. The cognitive dissonance?
Yes.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. And he started to speak out against it. Yeah, and wrote that great book, War is a Racket, for sure. And, you know, they try to frame progressive people as anti-military, but, you know, we're so often listening to people who have been in the military, like Butler and Howard Zinn, who was a World War II bombardier,
Well, consider the way that George McGovern was slimed by Richard Nixon. And here's a guy who had flown combat missions in a B-17 over Germany, as compared to Nixon did what in the Second World War? Answer, not much.
Right, right. John Kerry, another great example. And another great movie, Going Up River. That was about John Kerry's Vietnam experience. And it was way more radical than I was expecting.
Oh, no, it had certain Apocalypse Now elements to it, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, not going after Kurtz per se, because that's basically the Heart of Darkness. But no, I mean, that was not those rivercraft were not for the faint of heart, and that was duty he requested, was it not?
That's right. That's right. And it's astonishing that someone like George Bush and the whole Swift Boat crew could do what they did during that campaign.
And yet we see it happening all over again with the rise of this imagery. It's a thing that was put together by some godforsaken right-winger that shows heroic Rick Perry standing in his Roger Ramjet flight suit on the ladder by his fighter in which he was flying over Texas defending against Viet Cong incursions across the Rio Grande. And next to it is a picture of Barack Obama at 22 years old, the same age, wearing a Huggy Bear hat with a cigarette dangling off his lip. One is 1972, Rick Perry. The other is 1983, Barack Obama. And it's pure sleaze.
It is sleaze, big time. And speaking of veterans and Obama connections, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who also served, and who was actually involved with the health care of LBJ when he was in the military. I think he was a surgeon of some sort.
Yes. I think he was I don't think he was a surgeon. I think he wasn't he some sort of med tech or corpsman of some sort?
There you go.
But that's so often the case. You know, there are those stories that came out after the Second World War of British soldiers and some Americans who hooked up or met up with their German counterparts from the North Africa campaign. And they didn't hate each other. They bought each other rounds of beer. And there are the stories of those from Vietnam who have gone back for a sense of personal rapprochement.
Yeah, and some of them to do some demining efforts, which is such a huge project. I mean, the amount of unexploded ordnance and landmines that we left behind.
Yeah, that are ours.
Yeah.
It's not like the North Vietnam, you know, the NVA isn't cleaning up its own mines. No, especially over in Laos. Oddly enough, one of the people who covered it admirably, you know, even in the strangest places, Anthony Bourdain. His Laos episode contains a specific trip to a demining operation.
Yes, that was a fantastic episode. I applaud that guy for what he did with that show. Amazing. He even sat down with a gentleman who had lost a leg or an arm to a landmine and ate soup with him and tried to,
tried to come to his own grips.
Yeah, that was amazing. So, I've caught a couple of the Bourdain shows recently. I've also been watching another food show. Have you caught Diners, Dives, or Drive-Ins, or something like that?
A couple of times, yeah. Is that on Food Network?
It is, and it's the guy with the spiky blonde hair, and he's kind of... I think he does a great job at first. You know, I think I had kind of a reflexive dismissal of him, but as I watch his show.
Yeah, he doesn't instill in me or provoke in me, Preston, the sense of abject and utter loathing that Bourdain's colleague Adam Richman does. That guy just triggers my gag reflex.
Yeah, and that whole approach to food, you know, just
Watch me eat enough food to feed a Somali village for a week.
in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's pretty repulsive.
I mean, why not put a damn toga on him and a vomitorium in the next room and give him a throat tickling feather and have done with it.
Right. I'd love to see the outtakes of that show. I'm sure he's lost it a few times. But one thing in the defense of even those repulsive shows is that he will always go to the family-owned, the independent restaurants. He'll never go to a chain. And you recently here in Colorado, I noticed one of the Perkins filed for bankruptcy, and I think people are seeking some of the more independent restaurants.
You know, it took me 5 years to get back there. But I called Boss Man Wayne the night that we did it. You know, I was in D.C. recently. And we happened to be staying up in an area called Thomas Circle. And down just a block away on Vermont Avenue, was this little downstairs place called Stan's. And I introduced my buddies Mickey and Bo to Stan's, and they don't ever want to get anywhere. They don't go anywhere else in D.C. for staying, and because it's so real and it's so, it's not corporate. You know, it's a neighborhood tavern where they pour with a very free hand. But the food, you know, the catfish nuggets. That haven't come from the freezer. They've come from the fish market down by the Navy Pier or somewhere around in there. These chicken wings that are unlike anything. Oh my God.
Yep.
I mean, they're meat candy. and on and on, and just the friendliest people. And you can't get that walking into Perkins.
Yeah, and kind of connected to all that, and local food, and even pouring with a friendly hand. I just got back from the community-supported agriculture project that I'm a member of. It's this family farm in northern Colorado called Grant Family Farms, and one of their workers was at the pickup point, which is just a few blocks from where I live. They have several along the Front Range of Colorado, but the one I go to is just about 10 blocks from where I live at a kind of a center for urban core workers who are doing good work themselves, and they let Grant Family Farms put out the produce of the week for the, you know, people who have invested in the farm and to help the family farmer out. And so they had this representative of the farm there just to kind of share bread, and because they sell shares of bread that they make as well. And they had some cherry wine.
Oh.
So it was a little party. It was a good time. And I learned that there are 4,200 members of this one farm in northern Colorado. And it's big. I mean, food is such a core, intimate topic and connected to energy issues and, of course, human health issues and health of the soil and health of the farm workers. And Thomas Jefferson, you know, talked a lot about the importance of family farms, and these agribusiness firms like Monsanto and Cargill and ADM, the food overlords of the world, you know, they're starting to feel the nips were taken at their heels. And it's fun to see. And one of the many alternatives we have to destroying this beautiful planet of ours. So if people see an opportunity, you know, websites like localharvest.org or maybe planting your own tomato plant or whatever you might have room for.
Yeah, David in Tennessee has a garden he maintains in his backyard. By his own, you know, by his own design. It's not huge. But he got, I got a note from him a couple of months back. Bob, what the hell is this? Because a volunteer had showed up in his garden. Well, he is in Tennessee after all.
yeah.
Is that a cucumber? No. It was a volunteer cantaloupe. and just he said produced the most beautiful, rich, sweet things you would. Well, it was just it was breakfast candy for the few that he got off of there.
Wow.
And tomatoes, you know, he'll be making tomato sauce to get him through the winter because, you know, long about February, the taste of fresh tomato can save your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me, for my part, I haven't had a garden since the kids were little, but I'm absolutely determined to do it somewhere along the way. I just have to, well, I got to get a tiller because I can't garden on a small scale. I have to have enough to, you know, I got to have 10 feet of corn to walk through or I'm not happy.
Hey, you know, even if you've got some dandelions that, you know, haven't been totally bombarded with some toxic...
Yeah, no Roundup around here.
You know, and so much of that stuff comes right out of World War One. You know,
oh, it was developed where I grew up.
Okay.
That's where nitrates were turned into high explosives, and then after the Second World War, of course, wait, we've got this here nitrate industry. Maybe we could make fertilizer out of it.
There you go. And, you know, I live across the street from Whole Foods, and if I have the cash, I can buy dandelion greens for, you know, the price of caviar almost. And I'm like, the contradictions are getting so stark.
And they are indeed. Hey, Preston, good talking to you. I hope you won't be too long in calling back. Got to get out of here, brother.
You bet. I've got a whole bunch of notes here of other people's comments, and I'll be catching up with you on them.
All right. Well, that'll be wonderful. We'll talk soon.
Great.
Bye now, Preston. And thus we come to the end of the program. I got to every blinking light but one. How about that? It's time to get out of here. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Thanks to everyone who makes all of this go. Rick Smith is next. And Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Sideways. You even get, really, with something that you do every day of your life, for the most part, you can even get rusty, and that was me. But I think, yes, I got all the buttons pushed. Everything is happening as it should be. This is the horn. This is a brand new show. Bob's back to the microphone. He's also talking about himself in the third person, which is never really a good thing. It's Wednesday. It's the 7th of September. Monday and Tuesday were busts. Monday because, you know, this is crazy. This is just nuts. Agnes went and got her flu shot. I haven't gotten mine yet. And she promptly began feeling like she had the flu. Now me being rational me, I said, well, shucks, you know. Probably nothing to it. You're just exhausted, dear. Get a little rest. And then, by Monday, I, too, felt as if I had the flu. And everybody who's ever had it knows exactly what I'm talking about. Everything hurt. My eyelashes hurt. Everything ached. Everything still, well, doesn't ache as badly, but I think that's through more the miracles of modern ibuprofen than anything else. So Monday I was knocked down, and then Tuesday I was feeling none too good, but and neither was Agnes. I think she's actually wearing a bathrobe and three quilts right now. She's freezing. It's probably 78 to 80 degrees in the living room there, and she's freezing. That's not a criticism. That's simply an observation of fact. So Tuesday rolled around. Yeah, welcome to the Horn, by the way. Did I say that? All kinds of new people tuning in all the time, and I have to remember to be genial in my hosting duties. I'm guilty of getting to this place where I assume that we're all just one big happy family here, and I don't have to. Welcome, if you're listening for the first time. I hope it will not be your last. I hope you'll join here with the Horn family and be happy and enjoy the program, and in amidst all the grim, godforsaken news of miserable fascists marching around in our midst in the United States, and ignorance, fear, and hostility stalking the land, we'll find a little time for a smile now and then. Hi, I'm Bob. Okay. I really don't want to say now that that's out of the way, but now that that's out of the way. So Tuesday dawned bright and surly. And I've told you a lot about how our daughter Margie wasn't feeling well and badly needed to have her gallbladder removed, and we've been trying to get that done for about a year. Up against a bureaucratic network of, people who just don't believe that sick people are really sick, I guess. Or maybe they're fundies who believe that we should try the healing hands of faith first. Whew. But no, Tuesday rolled around, and yea, verily, Tuesday was scheduled to be the day that Margie got her gallbladder out. So I knew it was going to be a long day, but I also had planned on being behind the microphone that night. So I was on my way over to Agnes and Margie were already over at the hospital. It's about 25 miles from here. And so I was headed that way, too. When the phone rang, it was Ferg, or actually it was the school. No, they hadn't expelled him or anything. He had, in fact, sprained his ankle in gym. Yes, on a sort of gray and not particularly pleasant day in early September in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, they were playing indoor kickball on the slick, recently waxed floor of the high school gymnasium. And, well, it actually, it put me, when I was told what happened, it put me in the mind of a Jimmy Buffett song. What doesn't? But it really did. You'll see what I mean when I get there. Put me in the mind of a Jimmy Buffett song from, I believe, Coconut Telegraph. Yeah, here it is.
Position, crack with my leg like a shell of an egg. Someone call a decent physician. I'm no weed row. I can't pretend, though my mind is quite flexible. These brittle bones don't. I'm growing older, but
Yeah, see, what happened is instead of rounding first like Bubba did, Ferg was playing kickball inside the gym on the slicky, 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 freshly waxed gymnasium floor. And rounded third. Well, most of him did. His ankle didn't. Ferg zigged and his ankle zagged. And I think his toe wound up somewhere around the middle of his shin. People I've heard from said, oh, yeah, we could hear that from across the gym, that snap, that crackle, that pop, not Rice Krispies. So, that was it. Bob, need to come get the boy. He's messed up his ankle. Probably needs to go to the hospital. Well, hell, we're all headed that way anyway. Why not? More the merrier. So I picked up Ferg, and Agnes did duty being bedside with Margie while she waited to go to surgery. You know the way that goes. The orders come through. Okay, now don't you eat a blessed thing or drink anything for 24 hours before the surgery, and you be here at the crack of dawn, and we'll get going. Margie went into surgery about 1:30 p.m. yesterday. So Agnes stayed with her, 17 years old, never had anything more complicated than a tonsillectomy or a wisdom tooth extraction. And so she was a little bit nervous. But Agnes, in those moments, is at her very, very finest. And she took extremely good care of Margaret while I had hooligan on one ankle, my beloved son, in the emergency room. Bear in mind, all the while, with even my hair aching, and Agnes in the same shape. Well, the long and the short of it is my plan for making it back in time for a show yesterday was, sorry. Oh, nice try. And we got home about, 10:30, 11 last night, something like that. Yeah. And so I'm still not in the best place in the world, but we'll be okay. Like I said, ibuprofen seems to be doing a lovely job. 800 milligrams at a time. Much more, and I'm just going to, chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor. But we're pretty much okay. Ferg made it to school today, almost got into a one-ankled fight with a kid who took his crutches from him. You know, it's just lovely. It's just parenthood. I mean, who wouldn't want children? No, we'll look back on this someday, and Agnes and I in our golden years, and I wouldn't do that again if you paid me. No. Ferg went to school, got through school okay for the most part. Fortunately, the twisting the daily, and it wasn't broken. It was just a very, very, very ugly sprain. Probably would have broken if he hadn't been following his old man's advice and wearing high-top tennis shoes. Good enough for Johnny Unitas. Good enough for me. And so Margie is also okay. She is not the most comfortable person in the world, but it was done laparoscopically, and she seems to have been in pretty good spirits all day, had some heavy-duty pain meds to help her over the hump. And Agnes is running herself into the ground, taking care of Margie and, well, Ferg was at school, and I was just trying to stay out of the way. So that brings us to today, i.e., the present moment. A show for this evening. Really, Bob? We're going to do a show? You're not just going to sit there and babble? Well, you know, I don't just do things. I don't sit here and tell you this little saga because I think it's special. I sit here telling this little saga because I think it's incredibly ordinary. And because, and by extension, because I think ordinary is actually the key to understanding life. Because those extraordinary events don't happen a whole lot in our world. I mean, this is the week that we are apparently having to spend reflecting on what 10 years post September 11th, 2001 means. And with all due respect to our usual prayer meeting edition, I'm not up for that, right? I'm just too damn tired to crank up the preacher right now. Here in about 15 seconds, I'll get an email from Kate saying, "Yay, the preacher's down." And Kate hates the preacher. Not because she hates the preacher because she realizes how real that pernicious old fart is. Come on down. No, she does. Because he is real. Yeah, you can Israel. You can hear him on just about any church throughout the South and Appalachia and practically all over the country any Sunday you care to. But apparently this is the week that we have to spend reflecting on September 11th, 2001. I was out long enough to go today and pick up Margie's meds, and I heard a radio advertisement from that station group for whom I once worked in the fifth smallest radio market in America, hustling some missionary Baptist churches, "Salute to our first responders and military persons on this 10th anniversary of September 11th. And a local restaurant was going to be giving away a certificate for a free meal to any first responder or military person as a way of saying thanks. Now, don't take this as me gooning on first responders or military personnel, because that is not what this is. What sort of made me sick out of all of that, I mean, I was skeptical because it was a church, right? That's just because I am how I am. Skeptical, that is. But I wasn't full-on hostile until the announcer got to the point where he said, "Both of these special services honoring our first responders and our servicemen, service persons, are free admission to the public. And if you are a first responder or a service person, then we invite you to attend and wear your dress uniform as we honor this great nation." And that's where the gorge of an already less than happy intestinal system began to rise in me. They want people to show up in uniform, not to glorify them, but to glorify themselves. And if that's not enough to just make you throw up a little bit in the back of your mouth, as Stephanie Miller might say, I don't know what is. You know, another militaristic juncture between Jesus, who told Peter to put down his effing sword, and the most well or overfunded killing machine on planet Earth, the American military. Now, again, that's not me criticizing the military. That is me observing the fact that the Pentagon budget is the equal of what? The next ten militaries underneath it in order, you know, 2 through 10 combined? Yeah. So that kind of got all over me. And you know, if you've been watching TV at all this week,
It seems like every time you click, 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 click.
This week, on the Hunting Channel, a touching remembrance of that awful day, September 11th, 2001, hosted by Ted Nugent.
You know, really!
This is the Home Shopping Network, and we have this week we have a special, very special offer of applique, of applique house dresses with an embroidered applique rendering of the Twin Towers just at the moment when they began to fall. Only here on the Home Shopping Channel.
If we can make a buck off of it, we will dance on the dead themselves. And that's what this is. This is, but nowhere in all of the advertising and promotion have I seen any hint of introspection, because apparently 10 years is still too soon for us to really give any consideration to why September the 11th, 2001 happened. And I'm not talking about whether Building 7 was pushed or jumped or was shot, killed. I don't know. I'm talking about the underlying reasons of meddling in the Middle East that go back at least as far as Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran, and actually as far as our backing of that bunch of thugs, the royal house of Ibn Saud, in their takeover of the Saudi Peninsula, away from, I believe, the Hashemites. That was about 1925, wasn't it? Ain't nothing gone right since. We got married to the blood-soaked oil culture, and we have been faithful to our vows. Oh, goody. There it is. I conjured Kate. Yay, the preacher choked. And no sound bites from the fill-in-the-blanks, the political wannabes, please. Thanks for the tribe update. Did you say your life is ordinary? Dang. But it is, Kate, it is. It's, you know, what we go through here is no different than any mom-and-pop operation anywhere else. And this is, you know, these are the things that happen when you're trying to get through life and help carry a tottering economy along and, you know, all of that. This is an ordinary life. Compelling thrums of special report noises don't often vibrate through our lives. You know, Jake Tapper is not on the scene when the transmission goes out. There's no one from CNN standing by breathlessly as you answer the phone to hear that your son sprained his ankle rounding third in kickball. Kickball. No, it is the ordinary that makes up a life. And thus, you know, thus we celebrate the ordinary. Or at least note it as we go through it. I don't think there are any celebrities among the Horn family. Feel free to prove me wrong otherwise. Multimillionaires, welcome. I think, though, that we are mostly very ordinary people. We are raising or have raised kids, or maybe someday will raise kids. We are students, homemakers, male and female. We are gay and we are straight. We are working, wishing we were working, or remembering that once we knew what work was. parents and grandparents. And it is an American life, all of ours. So, you know, this is just my way of sharing that out. Yeah, Ron's there. Right on the money. Why 9/11 happened, Bob? Well, you know why it happened. Because they hate our freedom. Nothing to do with manifest destiny and America's habit of sticking our noses and our guns where they don't belong. P.S. At least Ferg wasn't leg swept while eating a taco by a police officer. And he's got that going for him, which is good. But ordinary. Here's a case of ordinary. And a good starting place, I believe. It is the story of a man, 26 years old, named Raymond Johnson from South Carolina. He's a laborer. Being that he lives in South Carolina, Stan, he has no labor union to represent him. Thus, he has a $9 an hour job working for a small outfit that, of course, doesn't provide health care coverage. He also gets about 30 hours a week. That's $270 a week before taxes, which he, probably winds up paying more taxes a year than the Koch brothers combined. More on them later. Raymond Johnson, 26 years old, $9 an hour laborer, in a job that is not full-time with no health insurance. Sadly, all too ordinary in America. And then something extraordinary happened to Raymond Johnson. This from an MSNBC report. Raymond Johnson had some chest pain. And, of course, men of all ages have been taught, and well, to take all forms of chest pain seriously. Because we have learned that one is never too young to holler, "Elizabeth, this is the big one," and have it actually be the big one. But it wasn't the big one. Not quite. Not exactly. It was the big one, but it was the big C. Because, you see, Raymond Johnson was diagnosed with breast cancer. Did I mention Raymond Johnson is a guy? Well, Raymond Johnson gets breast cancer. Raymond Johnson has no health insurance. I don't know if you know this, but breast cancer in men is particularly virulent, in large part because in many instances when it's found in men, it is not found until way too late. We are slowly making progress on teaching men to check the guys out in the shower once in a while and not feel particularly ooky about it, because testicular cancer kills too. We've even made the great stride of getting guys in touch with the idea that keeping up with their the doings of their prostate, tucked away though where it may be, is not unmasculine. We haven't gotten around to encouraging, you know, male breast self-examination because, well, you know, there are Seinfeld episodes that talk about the man's ear, and, or shall we call it the bro. Oh, those man boobs, those are funny. Is that a B-cup, George? Raymond Johnson was diagnosed with breast cancer. So, at the hospital, and this is the good part, he was encouraged to apply for healthcare help under the Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act. Because, in South Carolina, because these standards are largely driven by the state governments themselves. Raymond Johnson, at 30 hours a week and $9 an hour, is far too rich a man to qualify for regular Medicaid. Enter Jeff Stensland, spokesperson for the South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, which said department will not extend on an ordinary basis Medicaid to a guy who makes $9 an hour working 30 hours a week. At, you know, that $270, Raymond, don't spend it all in one place, you wealthy son of a gun, you. But Jeff Stensland, oh, we want to help him. The Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act is a program, a federal program, that is, run through the Centers for Disease Control. Or not run through, but the law itself is linked to a screening program that is maintained by the Centers for Disease Control. You know, the Centers for Disease Control, another one of those non-essential programs that your average garden variety teabag and re-pig licking doesn't see as necessary. Now, when I first saw this headline, I thought, well, South Carolina, you know, man with breast cancer, they probably think he's gay. Let him die! Because that is the prescribed punishment for homosexuals under the law of God and Jesus Christ, who is the same as God. But it turns out I was wrong. I'll take Jeff Stensland at his word. His department would not, on a dare, offer Medicaid coverage to Raymond Johnson and the vast wealth he has accumulated by working 30 hours a week for $9 an hour. But they really would like to get him coverage for his breast cancer. Stensland told MSNBC, "Now we want to cover this guy, but we simply can't." At present, Mr. Johnson says he feels pretty good, but he's undergoing chemotherapy and he may need surgery to treat his stage 2 breast cancer. He also says he has no idea how he's going to pay for his care. Probably a little miracle that he's getting any care at all. He told MSNBC, "I just can't tell you how floored I was when I got that letter saying I didn't qualify for help. The bills are going to be huge. I have breast cancer. I really don't see how that's possible. In the last 4 years, South Carolina has also tried to get coverage for two other men. Why? Because they're men. Because they're men. Stensland added, "We're in conversations with the federal government on this issue. It's clearly discriminatory, and we believe it's a good example of an overly rigid interpretation of the law, a law that's designed to help patients with these cancers." Because, you see, under the Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act, Raymond Johnson meets every one of the criteria set out, save for the fact that he is not a woman. Upon inquiry by MSNBC, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid said, "The law governing this specific program is linked to a CDC screening program. We are working with the CDC in South Carolina to see what options may exist to address this situation. We are committed to ensuring that all individuals who should be eligible for this program have coverage." Well, without the law being actually changed or someone stepping in, the only thing that's going to get this man coverage is a sex change operation. There's only one problem with that, though. South Carolina probably doesn't respect or make allowances for people who have had gender dysphoria surgery. But again, the man is at least getting treatment. He may well go bankrupt and lose everything he owns, but he might yet survive. David in Tennessee writes with a telling question. Was he a U.S. Marine trained at Camp Lejeune? Or Paris Island? Camp Lejeune had perk in the groundwater there from wells for years that gave scores of men breast cancer. P.S. Yes, the government knew the water was toxic, but delayed for one-plus decades before finding other drinking water sources. Marine, if I say the water's fit to drink, the water's fit to drink. I mention this story not for the sensational value of it, but by way of suggesting that we get this story moving. Now, I'm sure it's already been seen by a lot of people on MSNBC's website. It's the Today portion of that website, the Today Show. Joan Raymond is the author. But seriously, get the story moving. Maybe somehow public pressure can be brought to bear so that men who get breast cancer can also be treated, especially within the Medicaid system, which should even be more gender neutral, being a government program, than any private insurance plan. But we might want to move quickly, simply because the Republicans would just as soon see Medicaid, Medicare go the hell away. I offer you Representative Joe Walsh of Illinois. He spoke at Mundelein High School yesterday. Said he supports turning Medicare into a safety net program of last resort for seniors with no other coverage options. Medicare should be used only as a safety net for those who cannot get health care anywhere else, he said. We have got, this is a quote, we have got to begin to pay for and be more responsible for our own health care costs. It would be a telling moment to find out how the kids in that high school responded. Because, well, I keep going back to what Cassie said. She said her generation can't imagine being 40, let alone retirement age. The teacher in the class Thomas Kuhn asked him what kind of reaction he was getting to that from senior citizens. Walsh responded, maybe I'm wrong and I won't be in Congress 2 years from now, but most people say, I'm in. I know we have got a big problem. The hell does that mean? Maybe I'm wrong and I won't be in Congress 2 years from now, but most people say, I'm in. I know we have got a big problem. Translator? Anybody? The set translators on stun? Help? What the hell does that mean? But that's where we are. Of course, knowing Repiglicans to be Repiglicans, they probably do chuckle a little bit about a man with breast cancer. Maybe they could ask Tweedledum and Tweedledum, Dum, Dum, and Dumber tonight in the big Repiglican debate whether a man with breast cancer and a $9 an hour job for 30 hours a week should just treat that as the death sentence that God intends it to be. That, of course, will not happen. By the way, the pageant tonight with with all the Republican wannabe hopefuls, I have termed that the dragnet debate. Dum da dum dum. Dum da dum dum dum. I don't know, should we listen to some of that idiocy or should we talk amongst ourselves? I'm really disinclined to let any of these freaks have our airtime. Your airtime. But I'm sure there will be a lot of tweeting going on about it. So that's kind of a starting place. We are still all quite breathless, I'm sure, over what I'm positive will be a really, really good speech by President Obama tomorrow night. And we might even listen to parts of it. Or will it be coming on late? Will it be on after 9 o'clock? I'm not certain. I do know for certain, however, that Diaper Dave Vitter, Senator from Louisiana, isn't going to be watching the speech. He's been tweeting. Family and friends coming over for Saints game tomorrow. On to recovery and Super Bowl! Now, this is a speech to the Congress of the United States of America. That does include the Senate. Now, granted, President Not Sure has already bent over backwards to ameliorate and please the Repiglicans. It was going to be tonight, but it conflicted with the dragnet debate. And so he genially, in a spirit of compromise upon which this nation was founded, moved the speech to tomorrow. But it is an address to Congress, is it not? Yeah, we used to laugh about this when I was much younger. It's a joint session of Congress.
here.
But David Vitter can't be there. He's got an NFL game to watch. Now understand, look, okay? I know, maybe I'm being a hypocrite. I have bailed out on a couple of evenings in order to watch really, really big West Virginia Mountaineer games, be they basketball or football. I have. I'll offer this defense, however. I'm not a member of the United States Senate. David Vitter is. And this is a joint session of Congress. Congress is in session. But you see, that one doesn't even merit David Vitter's attentions. I don't know. Will there be any hookers there, Dave? Will there be any, I don't know, French maids uniforms, the leather-clad dominatrices with their little spanking paddles for you? Dave, you naughty senator, you! He ain't even going to be in D.C. Nope. He's going to be back home in Louisiana. Jeebus. Is there any kind of a sporting event going on tonight that the right wing can say, "Well, see, Obama's watching..." Fill in the blank. I guess not. No, there's all kinds of stuff out there. Something has been making the rounds today via the New York Times. New York Times' Jeffrey Zeleny writing that the White House is considering a new moratorium on regulations that affect the economy. The White House says that that is false. And you know what? I'm funny about considering language and the nuances attendant thereupon, or thereupon attendant, so as not to leave my preposition dangling. They are not considering. They have considered. It's a verb tense problem. Because, what was it? Executive Order 13356 or 13563 that Cass Sunstein was blithering on about the other night in his letter telling Lisa Jackson at the EPA to, by God, don't you get in the way of filth getting into our air. Remember that? Yeah, it's only been going on the rerun stream for about 5 days straight, so it's probably seared into your brain like marks on a steak. That reference, 13563, 13356, I forget, says that all regulations must meet or must not create uncertainty for the job creators. Clark Stevens, White House spokesman, told the New York Times, "Those reports are false. The administration has a strong record of implementing smart, sensible steps that protect consumers, public health, and the environment." Except for that whole thing you just did to Lisa Jackson, right, Mr. President? Oh, and by the way, just following up on the Lisa Jackson thing for a moment. What would you do if you were she? The first thing I thought about it all weekend long, I even thought about tweeting it, but got over the urge to. I was thinking, maybe it's time to resign, Ms. Jackson. You've done your job, you've attempted to do it in the best way you know how, and you've been told by your boss, the President of the United States, to go back and quit doing your job. Because you do know that the EPA, there is nothing in the mandate for the EPA that says they're to consider cost. Their only mission is environmental impact and environmental protection. Curiously enough, that's why they're the Environmental Protection Agency. And so the first thing I thought was, well, you know what? It's time for you to get off that sinking ship. But then I thought better of it. And I thought about the language that was used in that Cass Sunstein letter. The formal language of that letter, and I was reminded of this in an email from our buddy Tosh earlier today. The formal language in that Cass Sunstein letter was for her to reconsider. Now, everybody knows that in Washington speak, that means kill this thing. But language, you know, hey, the Republicans told us back during the Monica Lewinsky scandal, words mean things. And they do indeed. In this case, reconsider means take it back, pass it around to everybody there. Because I didn't read anything in that letter that said these guidelines are not going to take effect. It was, please reconsider. So she sends the guidelines around to all the relevant department heads and says, reconsider this. Did you get anything wrong? Did you fail to carry the 3 anywhere, boys? Ladies? No. It looks like all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. Good. Dear Cass Sunstein, per your request, we have reconsidered everything regarding the air quality rules as promulgated by EPA. Having, as you requested, reconsidered those rules, we find no flaw in them. The rules are completely within the mandate of the Environmental Protection Agency, and we resubmit them as read. Best regards, Lisa Jackson. Now, that's almost like something out of a Hollywood moving picture script, isn't it? And in this case, the Hollywood moving picture script would be right. Because then, President Not Sure would be forced to choose between his fawning desire to compromise away our health and well-being with the teabaggers versus whether or not he wanted to be made fool of by his EPA administrator. I don't know if Lisa Jackson understands that she has the upper hand in this. But she does. And you know why she has the upper hand in that story? For one very good reason. Because she's right. Because she stands in a place occupied by some several thousand American citizens who will die this year if those rules do not go into effect. I've seen a lot of the folks who will defend Barack Obama at all costs. I've seen a lot of pushback from them saying, well, you know, the process, just like Cass Sunstein said, the process begins in 2013 anyway. It's going to happen anyway. Really? Is it going to happen anyway? Well, then, gosh, let's wait till 2013 when 25,000, 30,000 people will be dead. When 10, 15,000 more preventable heart attacks will have happened. Let's just wait. Let's don't. Because, see, that it's going to happen in 2013 thing is conditioned upon, it's called a condition precedent, is conditioned upon the reelection of President Not Sure, who, if he is not sure right now which is more valuable, several thousand American lives or some jobs, is no likely to be more certain by 2013. Because there is no economic forecast that says that everything's okay by 2013. Right? That's what I thought. So, Lisa Jackson, I feel safe in saying that there is a nice handful of American citizens out here who have your back. If you want to stand up for people who would otherwise be arbitrarily and capriciously slaughtered in the innocence of their lives, men and women, young and old. Our friend Matt Osborne and I are on opposite sides of this issue. And in the post that he wrote about the reconsideration of the smog rules, he made a reference, he was referring to Lisa Jackson, but I think it was early in the morning, and he called her Shirley Jackson instead. And that sort of jumped all over me. Not, I don't mean like made me mad or anything, but rather reminded me of something. It was one of those little moments that it's a gift from the god of irony. Because you see, Shirley Jackson, back in 1948, wrote a short story that has become a classic. Among other things, when it was first published in the New Yorker, Shirley Jackson received death threats for this short story. The name of the short story is The Lottery. Many of you may be well familiar with it. The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely and the grass was richly green. The people of the village began to gather in the square between the post office and the bank around 10 o'clock. In some towns, there were so many people that the lottery took 2 days and had to be started on June 26th. But in this village, where there were only about 300 people, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours. So it could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow the villagers to get home for noon dinner. It was a story written, Shirley Jackson was a Vermonter, and I guess we call lunch noon dinner in Vermont. I'll go ahead and ruin it for you, for those of you who haven't read it, those of you who have know that a Mrs. Hutchinson is eventually chosen as the winner of the lottery and is then stoned to death, with one woman even handing a stone to her son, little Davy. Go stone mommy to death. And it's a story it exists on a number of levels, as any good literature does. But it is a story of how the innocents in our society are made to pay for the rest of the group. And so when Matt, in the course of defending the president's decision to allow several thousands of innocent Americans to go to their grim and dusty deaths because he's too pants-wetting afraid of the Tea Party, and in the course referred to EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson as Shirley Jackson, like I said, it was one of those moments when the god of irony hands you something, and well, damn it, if you don't run with the ball, you ain't in the game. Because that really, really is what is happening here. even saying, 2013. It'll be back. They'll redo it. Sure, don't you worry about it. It's just not necessary right now. Why fight fights you don't have to fight? Be like Sun Tzu, the Art of War. Pick your ground. Well, I can't, and it's because I feel a connectedness to the issue that I can't just say, well, you're right, President Obama. You know, I don't know any of those people who are going to die unnecessarily, so fuck them. I can't do that. It is, in fact, beyond my ability. So that's where we start this evening. A gentle reminder. We are off to a very good start in fundraising for the month of September. Better than to be expected. Not ahead of the game, but better than expected. And so I'm not going to, God's not going to call me home or anything. But it would be great if we could have some people step up and use the PayPal button or the snail mail address. And help us keep pace. Just keeping pace is a big part of it all. Keep pace with September. You know, basically what it boils down to is this is the basic number. If 250 people gave $10 a month, it would be done. It would be done. Be over with. Easy. Easy peasy. So, on any given show, we need somewhere between 6 and 10 Thrifty 250. We call it the Thrifty 250. 6 and 10 folks to kick in 10 bucks apiece. If you could be part of that 6 to 10 people this evening, it would be wonderful. And I kind of forget that this is Wednesday and I wasn't on the air Tuesday and I wasn't on the air Monday. That's my fault. But those are 2 days of, fortunately, we had folks helping out along the way. Thank you. Thank you for remembering. PayPal button's over at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. Try to make it as simple as possible and as painless. You know, that 10 bucks a month part, that works out to less than 5 cents an hour. For the programming once you figure, you know, everything out. Still not bad, huh? So, we'll take a little break and come back for your phone calls. You're lighting them up. A couple of lines yet remain open if you want to jump in. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I might be silly, but I'm never gonna have to hear the wings of school bells. Do, 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 not a genius, but maybe you'll remember this. I'll never say to ever want to be a man. Do, so careless. She's really got the standing and all the crazy little things she does for sure. And I can't seem to think of another kind of love that a boy could ever give a man if I'm not her.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bad body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight minutes past the hour. Hour number two does indeed begin. And we will go forthwith to your phone calls after a quick visit to the mailbag. A note coming in from Jude. Out in the Great Northwest. Jude noting with regard to that little dodgy con that some church in Beckley, West Virginia has going on, It was the pastor of the church, Jude. She said, when you mentioned 9/11, Bob, and the request for soldiers to wear their uniforms to that thing, I missed who was requesting it, but it does bring back a time when Glenn Beck was speaking in Seattle about 4 years back at one of our large sports arenas. Women Standing did a quiet, and that's womenstanding.com, did a quiet intention across the street from the main entrance, and while doing so, there were far too many of his followers than I could count who stepped over, kicked, accidentally, knocked to the pavement, and bumped the black combat boots with flowers, each one completely oblivious to what we were doing. There were numerous individuals who actually walked directly into me, and after observing me with the boots directly in front of me, gave me that glazed stare, dismissing the entire stand. Never one word of apology or what were we doing or who the black combat boots belonged to. They were on their way to see their hero, and it was obvious that the symbol we were standing with made no connection into, by, or for their limited field of understanding. The really disturbing fact was that Glenn had requested on the dedicated website to his event that the military dress in uniform and bring their ID to attend his gathering. But get this, Bob, the military personnel were actually charged $10 a person, including the soldiers' family members. Thank you for your good wishes to Margie, Jude. And thank you to all of you who sent good wishes along the way yesterday. I was sort of just trying to keep folks apprised of what was going on with my tweeting. A lot of you sent good wishes along, and it was much appreciated. It very much made Margie smile, especially today when she could was a little more in the world of, well, coherent. But, of course, you know, Jude points towards something, as did the story about what's going on in Beckley, and that is this. That one of those hallmarks of the rise of fascism is the marriage of the military and the state religion. And if you don't think that the fundamentalists have the desire to create a state religion, well, you just haven't been listening to the show long enough, I guess. There will, you know, in the Dragnet debate tonight, there will be lots of that. And I'm sure that there'll be, well, you've all seen, or many of you have seen, that Family Guy episode where Lois runs for mayor of Quahog. And Brian the dog finally convinces her, listen, nobody wants to hear about your tax plan. Just say 9/11 a lot. And in the town meeting where she does that, she has the crowd in the palm of her hands. Because this is, and perhaps it's no different from any other nation state, this is and always has been a nation in which one can go a long, long way in doing what is called waving the bloody shirt. But it is frustrating to know that we are 10 years out from September 11th, 2001, and we have no more, as a nation, I'm not talking about you or me or us, we have no more of an idea of why September 11th, 2001 happened. The Illuminati! Than we did the day it did happen. No clue whatsoever. No questions answered. You know, little Charlie McCarthy Bush to Dick Cheney's Edgar Bergen sitting on his lap. With Cheney's hand, God knows where, making little Georgie make mouth flapping noises in front of the 9/11, the dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, stupided up 9/11 commission. No idea why it happened. And the problem is, or maybe it's the way things are preferred. As long as the American people don't know why it happened, then the American people will be plumb astonished the next time it happens. You might note that there was a warning has gone out from the FBI telling the American people that Al-Qaeda may want to use little single-engine planes to attack America. And, you know, it always comes with the usual disclaimer. No credible evidence has been found that they actually intend to do this. But, you know, we're just telling you. Just saying. Just saying. Maybe that needs to be the new motto of the FBI. Just saying. Right? Yeah, so let me quit fiddle farting around and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, Susan.
Yeah. First of all, you mentioned dear old Gerald Walsh and his you needed a translator about him not being there and big problem.
Well, I'm in. I know we got a big problem.
Yeah, the big problem, and here's the translation. The big problem is if he gets reelected.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's good. Now, the reason I'm calling, I don't know about anybody else. I have had the TV off most of the week, and I will have it most of the next week. I'm not watching any of the stuff on 9/11. I refuse to watch it. I can't watch it.
Yeah, it's a bit much for me, too. I mean, it started a couple of weeks ago. I walked in, and there on the TV box was the Twin Towers burning again. I thought, Jesus, two weeks? I mean, pretty soon it'll be like Christmas, and they'll start it in, I don't know, July.
Yeah. If the cons get me to the point of screaming, the shows where they honestly try, like Rachel Maddow had a thing where she and some other guy honestly tried to do some honest digging into what we've become since then. I literally couldn't watch it because it's too painful. I can't watch it. I can't pull myself through that again.
No, and you know, let's remember that this is typical. Truthfully, it is typical behavior for the for-profit media. How many times, Susan? How many times did we have to watch the Challenger blow up before our very eyes again and again before somebody inside the for-profit media back in 1986 got enough common decency to say, you know, this might be a little traumatic for people.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not waiting for somebody to finally wake up because, frankly, I don't think anybody in the for-profit media has a decency button anymore. I've got an off button.
Yeah.
That simple. So the thing stays off, I'll stick my nose in a book, and just forget about it. I'm not going to play their games. I know where we're going. On, oh, here's something that'll blow your socks off. I'm having a little chat with one of my fundy stepsons.
Oh.
The one in Australia. And guess who brings up the F word?
Oh, no.
As in fascist.
Oh, that you are?
No, as in we are.
Oh, the U.S.?
Yeah.
Wow, from a fundy.
Yeah, I almost fell off the chair.
But then again, in many ways, it's not so. Maybe it's not so hard to see from outside.
Yeah, and he's
because when you live somewhere else, and you know, I've gotten notes like this from Kevin over in China. When you live somewhere else and you look at the United States, you know, it's a real case of pretty is as pretty does.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And he spent most of his life outside of the United States. And so it just blew me away that he's finally coming to see what I've been saying all along. You know, and Donald was saying all along, we're going down this road. And he's finally The only thing I could do was say, you know, Ken, you said it. I didn't. Remember that.
Well, and I don't know. How fundy is he?
Very.
Oh, okay. Crackers turn into Jesus meat in your tummy and all of that stuff.
Plus he works for an oil company. He's a geophysicist.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, that's why he's lived all over the world. But just the fact that he is willing to admit that that's where we're going is a huge leap from somebody who was the way he was. Now, I don't expect him to start turning into a raging liberal anytime soon. It's not going to happen. I know that I tell you that right now. But just admitting that, you know, fascism is, if not already here, it's romping down the road at a gallop, is a major concession on his part.
Or maybe not a concession, but just an acknowledgement of reality.
That's a better word for it. It's a major acknowledgement of reality, the fact that this is the way it is now. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he never bothers to come back to the United States.
And for those of us who stay in the struggle, we kind of have to make an America worth coming back to, don't we?
Yeah, well, especially when you consider that he and his cronies were the ones that caused this mess.
Well, I mean, if he was over there, not directly.
Yeah, I know, but it was him and his opinions and the people he associated with.
But there's another way to look at that, Susan, and that is that he is opening his eyes.
Yeah.
And that in fact, what it boils down to is he was manipulated. I mean, I've got a statistic here that I found in Mother Jones today that is ultra creepy. Question, and this is a survey from the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. The title of the article is Views Differ on Shape of Earth, Climate Edition, and it comes from a quip by Paul Krugman that the for-profit media, my term, not his, are so afraid of being accused of being biased that if Republicans took up the stance that the Earth was flat, the for-profit media would publish a headline that says, Views Differ on Shape of Earth. So, hence the title of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of questions about global climate change, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Drum at Mother Jones says, as usual, plenty of people don't believe in global warming, and Tea Partiers really, really don't believe in global warming. But in a way, that's not the most appalling result of the survey. This is. Now get this. And bear in mind that we're talking about people being manipulated into a position. Now, you know the number of scientists that say that global climate change is, in fact, very much real. It's in excess of 98%. Okay? I mean, the number of so-called scientists who don't think it's real is so minute as to be statistically insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, question 30. To the best of your knowledge, what proportion of climate scientists think that global warming is happening? 81 to 100%? 18% of Democrats agreed with that. That's the right answer. Independents, 18%. Republicans, 10%. Teabaggers, 1%. You get down to 21 to 40%, that's 10% of Democrats, 10% of Independents, 15% of Republicans, but 28% of teabaggers. Now, those people, as much as we tend to think, to believe so, understanding the meaning of that word, teabaggers really don't live under rocks.
Uh-huh.
And most of them manage to somehow continue to breathe out and breathe in without outside help. But you don't get to a number like 28% who think that 28% who think that less than a majority of scientists say global warming is real without help.
Yeah.
And it is a failure of media. It is a failure of our side to communicate. It is this anti-intellectual bent that this nation has had almost from the very beginning, combined with religionism. God said it, that I believe it, that settles it. I've seen that on too damn many bumper stickers to count. Of the teabaggers, don't know enough to say, here's another creepy one, the national average of don't know enough to say was 26%. That's actually, it was only 25% among teabaggers. That's a barometer of things far beyond climate science.
Yeah. Did you ever read that book I suggested?
Which one?
Okay, science fiction has this nasty habit of being prophetic. Andre Norton was really good at it.
Yeah.
The woman was just, she did a, let me see if I can find it here real fast here. She did a book. It was about, basically, what happened, it was the aftermath of the takeover of an anti-science movement and what happened afterwards.
Not good things, I trust.
To put it mildly, let me see here. Let me see if I can find it real fast. I would suggest you. Okay. There's a compilation that has that book and the sequel in it, and it's called Starflight. That contains the book I'm talking about, which is called The Stars Are Ours and Starborn. The Stars Are Ours was written in 1954.
Yeah.
Long time
ago. Isn't that neat? I mean, not neat, but.
But it's scary. It's scary because the whole, you read this book, and it made an indelible impression on me, because you can take that book and you can push it forward into the 21st century, and with very few tweaks, you can have teabaggers.
Yeah.
And they bring down a world-spanning civilization, and, well, I won't go
I understand.
It's just amazing. But the thing with the, I think the thing with my stepson, I think the thing that one of the things, one of the reasons why he was forced into the admission that he did, he's a scientist.
Well, that's why I was asking about the whole, really fundamentalist, like 7 days creation fundamentalist?
Well, yeah, he's, that's the problem. He's a scientist, but he's also got that religion grafted on. But the science came first. The geophysics came first.
So he's only arguably insane 1 day out of six?
Oh, well, actually, it's more like 3 days out of six.
Sundays and Wednesdays and what? Oh, well, never mind.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I guess there are people who are like that. But, you know, more and more science comes out. I saw a story, David in Tennessee sent it to me the other day, about gene mapping.
Yeah.
And it has been determined that before leaving Africa, just trying to explain to a Tea Partier that they're, you know, some part of them's African. Yeah.
Only
South African and the white ones.
Actually, the black ones, honey.
But before leaving Africa, we sort of interbred.
Gleefully.
With other species of humanoids or hominids that are now extinct.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the names, but you know, one of them's obviously Neanderthal. But there were there were a couple of others, and the thing is, they tracked down through the genome.
Yeah, well, after they left Africa.
Right, but what's important is they track through the genome, and the genome. I don't know. Compare it to light from space, Susan. You can measure. Oh wow, I need an astronomer. But you can measure light and invisible light, ultraviolet, that kind of stuff, coming from space, and you can tell how far away something is by how the light works.
Yeah.
That's about as complex as I can get on that topic.
Redshifted or not.
Right, and the same thing with rocks. The reason we can, the reason that Louis Leakey was able to say that the creatures, the fossils found in Olduvai Gorge were as old as they were is because rocks decay. Certain isotopes in rocks decay at a set rate that can be measured over time. Well, now, you know, we've got one of those inside the human genome. And it says that that was happening at least 30,000 years ago, mm-hmm. and maybe 100,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how you can be a person who says that, and I'm not, you know, I'm using geophysics as an example, but I don't know how you can, Doppler effect, thank you, Benny. I don't know how you can, on Monday through Friday, say that the laws of science govern geophysics, but on Sunday say the Earth is 4,000 years old.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't scan.
I mean, especially in the oil industry.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't scan.
I mean, for me to be able to pull that off, I'd have to drop acid, do up some meth, And smoke three pounds of bad weed and get drunker than Adam's off ox before I ever went to church. Because it takes that much to completely turn my brain the hell off.
Yeah, I think basically that's what he did. He just basically turned his brain off. Because that's the only way he could go in there and actually believe this crap. Of course, he's the same guy who, when he was trying to convert me, suggested that I convert just in case.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. which was kind of a dead giveaway that, it, you know, oh, come on, Ken, give me a break. You know, this was not exactly what I'd call a real religious zealot, not to me. Because you don't tell somebody, do it just in case.
Yeah, because you never know.
Yeah, you know, oh, give me a, what are you doing? You got a quota or something?
Yeah, but you're missing out on some hellacious. I mean, you're missing out on some hellacious good cobbler in the basement of the Baptist Church, Susan. You are. I mean, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, but look at all my friends in hell that I can have fun with. That is assuming I even believed in hell, which I don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, you really can't square. You can't square the salvation of Adolf Hitler and Jerry Falwell sitting there at the right hand of God and everything. With anywhere you really want to be in an afterlife, can you?
Nope. As far as I'm concerned, they're gone. Just
poof. And if they're not, I don't want to be where they are.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine by me. And, you know, the whole thing with my stepson is I think it's just getting to the point where he just can't take the stress anymore. And it's... Yeah.
Well, sometimes reality has a way of intruding, Susan.
Yeah, and I think it is. And yeah, and that's okay. That's cool.
Well, it'll be interesting to find out if he continues to think we're on the road on the sorry road to fascism, and you know, keep us updated. We'll talk soon, Susan. Take care.
I will give my love to Margie and give my love to Agnes as well.
I sure will. I will absolutely. Bye now.
Okay. Bye bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Jim, how are you?
Fine. Look, I've got three things to say, okay?
Okay.
The first thing is about 9/11. And in memory of that, I had 3,000 lights that go on at the exact times that the Tower 1 was hit. And they go off at the exact time PM, Tower 2 fell.
Every day.
It's in memory of those people whose only crime was to go to work that day.
Yeah.
And I say about that, number two, I feel about that the way the Russians feel about the city of Leningrad. Let no one forget, let nothing be forgotten.
And I'm not suggesting that it be forgotten.
And I am so happy to see that they are rebuilding that site with which I am all too familiar because I used to go to meetings in WT7. And I used to work in the Pentagon that was also hit. And I lost people.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. And my point is that turning it into some sort of for profit orgy is the last thing in the world that is appropriate.
Profiteering. I'm glad that they're rebuilding the 16 acres. I'm glad they have the pools where the tower voids once stood. And I hope I live to see the restoration of that symbol of America's power and might. That's the way I feel.
And I think that's entirely appropriate. Now, you know, when we, for instance, the late great debate generated by the for-profit media and the right wing working hand in hand, as they so often do, about the Ground Zero Mosque. You know, that is contrary to the fitting memory of those who, as you well know, died going to work that day. So is the right wingers and teabaggers response that healthcare should not include caring for those people whose lives were not ended but rather were altered forever and in fact in many ways ruined on that day. One individual who experienced that is within the Horn family and has been for years. You know, she knows what it means to have suffered on that day.
I'm sure she does.
And
people who were adversely affected by the impact of those buildings be destroyed and the toxic elements that were released. And this is something you cannot forget. This is something you should watch. And if you turn away from it, that's your business.
Well, no, I'm not saying turn away from it. I'm saying don't participate in the prophetized orgy of it.